is The Big Web Show, everything web that matters. This show is hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman and Dan Benjamin. That's me. This episode is sponsored by MailChimp, powerful email marketing. Build and manage your email list, design killer HTML email campaigns, and send emails with confidence. Sign up for a free account, you can store up to 500 subscribers and send up to 3,000 emails a month. And MailChimp's new location-based technology gives you the power to send email campaigns that include geo-targeting, locally timed delivery, auto-translation, and more. Visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to find out about special deals just for Big Web Show listeners. This is episode number 14 of The Big Web Show. I'm Dan Benjamin. My co-host today, as always, is the amazing Jeffrey Zeldman, just back from an event, a part trip out in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis,
right?
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. And we have an amazing guest here today with us, too.
We certainly do. We have Josh Williams, who is the CEO and founder of Gowalla. If you don't know what Gowalla is, it's then you should leave now because we don't really want to talk to you.
Yeah, shame on you.
Gowalla is this amazing. if you like checking in and you like to let the world know where you are and what you're doing, or to let find your friends, Gowalla is an app for iPhone, BlackBerry, Android. Well, definitely iPhone and Android and BlackBerry, most BlackBerries, right? Or just the new BlackBerries?
We're getting them knocked out. Yeah, working our way down the list.
Yeah. What made you choose, the iPhone over the BlackBerry initially?
is that a real question?
No, that's not a real question. Here, Josh, for those who don't know, let's do your background a little bit. You're under 30, correct? You're
like 20, actually, I turned 30 in January, so I'm there now. Yeah,
you're there now. CEO at 30, not too bad. You started as a web designer, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and actually before that as a print designer. So PageMaker, Quark Express, all the fun stuff.
That's it. So describe that journey. What made you, as you've been through several transitions for a while, I know you guys were working on Facebook, you sort of left the web to work on Facebook apps, and then now you're doing this,
cool. The background, I started a design consultancy called Firewheel probably 8 or 9 years ago, and we specialized in iconography, basically doing really tiny pieces of art for mobile devices and websites, and kind of specialized in that along with the guys at Icon Factory. We were one of the early studios that really did that sort of thing. Right. And then somewhere along the way, we built this site called Icon Buffet, and it was basically a stock, icon design site that let people come and, you could purchase, stock icons, but like the gimmick we kind of came up with eventually was this idea that we were going to create, one set of icons and give them to person A and another set of icons and give them to person B. And the only way to get them all is to kind of invite your friends along and trade them back and forth. And that became kind of like this little, cult, community. It was very successful in its own right.
That's on Facebook.
That was before Facebook, actually.
Okay.
That's what led us there. Okay. So we kind of jumped from that, through some clients and decided, hey, why don't we take this, this thing that worked with Icon Buffet, and of course the idea there was, let's swap icons, for a business purpose. But then we decided, if we do this on Facebook, let's just let people do it as a game. And so that kind of, manifested itself in a product that we built called Pack Rat that basically was a card collecting game that let people trade icons back and forth. A lot of fun.
It was a huge hit.
That changed the way I think a lot of people who weren't yet interested in Facebook. It changed the way they saw Facebook. I mean, they really, at that point, they said, this isn't just about friending people and poking people. You can actually do something that's kind of fun here, that's kind of different. I'm not saying it was the first game, but it was the first maybe game that appealed to
the design community at large.
Yeah, it was definitely, kind of early on and pre like Farmville and like, you know, giving cows back and forth and such. It was interesting because I think we built it figuring, people might play this thing an hour or two a day. And what we ended up finding is like people were coming, and spending 5, 6, 8 hours a day, playing this game. And it was really interesting and a learning experience for us. And it was kind of, coming out of that, of course, some of the social gaming companies you've heard of, the Zyngas and the Playfishes of the world got really big. And ultimately we decided that, while, it was interesting, we really wanted to be back on the web. We wanted to build something, that was its own destination. And of course the iPhone had come along. We were fascinated with like the location services, part of it. And I was sitting, on the lake up in Lake Tahoe and had this moment of epiphany about a year and a half ago, like, wow, what if my phone were like a passport and I could actually, check in at a place and stamp it with some sort of like, visual indication that was relevant to that place. And of course the original thought was like, man, let's inspire people to go out and go to places like, Lake Tahoe or the Golden Gate Bridge or the Eiffel Tower or Ayers Rock and in Australia. But then it became, evident really quickly as we started mocking it up. Well, if we're going to inspire people to go out and do these extraordinary things, we have to make the everyday fun as well. So how do we make it interesting to go to the coffee shop down the street? And so that was kind of like the early birth of what became Gowalla.
You do. I have to say that's kind of the genius of it. I mean, of course it's great when you're, on vacation in Paris and you get to do the Eiffel Tower. That's wonderful. But there's something about adding your own like local deli that's kind of cool, or your own gym. And like, I mean, I keep track of, I know how many times I've taken my daughter to school. I know how many times I've gone to the gym. I can see, if I'm working out more than I'm going to the office, or if I'm going to the office more than I'm working out, I can see all that. And so in a strange way, it's kind of a, live streaming diary type thing, especially once you started integrating with Twitter and Facebook. I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that was one of the first things that you did, and it made it pretty easy to just, not in this annoying way, but just hopefully, but just allowing people a choice when they're at a place to use Twitter or Facebook kind of as a platform, mm-hmm. as a transmission channel, but use Gowalla as the means of expression. Go ahead.
As I said, I think I kind of come from my parents were road trippers, and there's this generation, in front of us that, or I guess behind us, that was more prone to, do these European vacations, where you kind of collected tchotchkes along the way, or, road trip across America and you buy the shot glasses. And we're not really a culture that does that anymore. At least, I'm not, but at the same time, the reality is it wasn't necessarily about the shot glass or the tchotchke. It was the, just having that proof of, hey, I was there, or I went to that place and it was interesting. And I think that's what we're trying to, recreate is, a little bit of a travel log, both on a local level, but also on a, international level.
Right. I was there, and now you've added features that, so that someone who also was there can leave you a comment, or can comment on your photo. I loved that place. Did you also go and see the such and such exhibit or whatever?
Exactly. No, it's really fun.
Are you planning to add any new features?
So we've got, three or four things that are really, really exciting. A couple of them I think are going to, blow your mind. Unfortunately, I can't dive too deep into them today, but they are coming soon. One of them, so I think we're fascinated with, so this idea of checking in has become a popular metaphor for, it's basically a status update the same way you'd have it on, Twitter or Facebook, only in this instance, it's tied to a place. So the check-in is, it's a really low friction way of saying this is where I'm at. But I think we're really interested now in like what sorts of information can be shared, you know, beyond that. So not just that I'm at this place or this is my favorite place, but again, here's a recommendation. Here's a photo. We'd love to get short form video in there very soon. And but then beyond that, how can we start structuring those recommendations or the things that you have to say so that we can start pulling apart and know that, hey, Jeffrey thinks that, you know, this is a really scenic viewpoint at night, or this is the sketchiest bar that he's ever been to. And if we can start layering kind of some structured data of that type across, you know, places and friends, it becomes really, really interesting.
So, Josh, how did the CNN Money Features, the best places to go with Gowalla? How did that thing come about?
You know, somehow we got to know some of the folks at CNN, and you know, honestly, at some point, I think one of our guys ended up even getting to sit at Wolf Blitzer's desk, which was kind of cool. But they've been real friendly to us and kind of brought that opportunity, you know, to the table. And of course, we're fascinated with anytime we have an opportunity to connect people with places, that seems to be right up our alley. So as opposed to just going out and doing, you know, kind of business development deals that are random, this one just seemed, you know, to fit very appropriately. I think it's gone well. Hopefully we can do more of this sort of thing in the future.
What's the thinking behind letting people create journeys, which I love? I mean, I've created a couple myself. You sort of, you know, and I know there's one guy in New York who I ended up friending just because, or following, or I'm not sure what I'm doing, but because he was everywhere I went. Everywhere I went, this guy had been. He was either a stalker trying to murder me and I wanted to make it easier, or or we just liked the same stuff in the city. So, and this guy has done like 20 trips in New York.
Oh, wow. You know? Wow. Yeah, the I think that was one of the early features that we felt like, you know, a trip is almost a, you know, think of it as like a playlist of places.
Right.
And, you know, right now we're starting to branch it out a little bit where you can basically reward somebody for completing a trip if they say, make it to all the spots in the trip, or maybe they just have to make it to 3 of the 10 or 5 of the 10. Eventually we're going to do ordered trips as well. So basically they kind of reveal themselves as you go through it. So we'll only show you the first one. And over time, you know, once you check in there, the next spot's revealed. So there's some interesting things, you know, that we definitely want to build in the future around trips, just to allow people to, if they want, provide a little bit more of a way to send your friends on a journey. And again, I think that's a lot of what, you know, our goal is how do we get millions of people to go out and explore the world in a way that they otherwise wouldn't have done.
But even the functionality that you provide right now is really a great service. It's like, okay, so I live in New York and people will say, I'm coming, what should I see? People ask this all the time.
Absolutely.
I'm coming to New York, what should I see? Or I really want great food. I don't want to spend a lot of money. And I could make a list of like Jeffrey's 10 favorite restaurants that are amazing that you don't have to spend a lot of money, or things I think you should see, maybe things that are unusual. But it really, and you have this now, so like people can give an insight into like gay New York or theater New York or music New York and every town.
Exactly. So the really cool one that actually just rolled out this morning is the folks at Levi's, and I don't know if you're familiar, there's a theater here in Austin, the Alamo Draft House. It's
yes,
a really
familiar.
Unique independent theater. So the Draft House is doing basically a roadshow of showing famous movies in parks or just open locations around the U.S. But the film that they're showing is typically, it was a film that's relevant to the city that they're playing it in. So for instance, they're showing Rocky in Philadelphia and Godfather in New York and so on. So if you actually follow Levi's now on Gowalla, they have trips that are, you can actually go and check in at all the highlight locations from the film. So, you know, Vito Corleone's home, that sort of thing. It's really, really interesting. And I think that those are the sorts of, you know, kind of journeys that start to, you know, give you a different sort of lens to look at the world through. And in this instance, they're actually giving away some prizes and stuff for people who actually go and complete the trip. So that's really awesome.
How do you negotiate the line, or where do you draw the line between stuff that's commercial and potentially lucrative for Gowalla and cool, and stuff that's potentially lucrative for Gowalla, but you feel that your users would think that was uncool? Like, you know, there's these CNN things that then it's optional to look at them, or what you were just talking about, versus ads that might show up when you get to a place. I mean, you must be thinking about there's an opportunity for, you know, just the same way that they put ads in urinals or at bars and so on, right? Not actually in the urinal, although.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But there was a better line there, but I couldn't think of it. Their context is very important for advertising, and you have the potential to make a great deal of money, I would imagine. But you all, and that's where advertising's going, as we know. But we also don't want to offend users. I don't want to be like, every time I go to my gym, getting sold something. So
yeah, your whatever the creatine of the day is, or yeah, that's not what you want.
So how do you must talk about, without giving away anything you might or might not be working on, just how do you think of those issues?
So I think there's definitely been a bit of, you know, when you go and you hear from the social media folks of the world, and there's so much interest and excitement in the location space. And I think a lot of this is pent up from, you know, the promise of 10 years ago that someday in the future we'd have this magical world where we walk down the street and our phones are location aware, and like coupons just, you know, randomly pop up like text messages that say, surprise, you know, you can get, you know, 15% off at Gap. And frankly I don't think the world's that interested in that sort of technology. And yet now that we have the technology that in theory allows for that sort of thing to happen, there's a bit of a rush and I think a pressure on services that are dabbling in location to dive headfirst into that. And frankly, that doesn't really interest us that much. Just like the whole magical like coupons that appear thing. Now, where we are interested is, again, things that provide content that is valuable to our users and connects them again with the places and events that are around them. One of the guys on the team here, Andy, the other day said something to the effect of, if it's good for the brand, but it's not good for the users, then it's not good for the brand. And right. I think that's something that we're having to educate a lot of these folks on right now who are coming to us, who basically are saying, oh, I've got this really great idea, and would it be awesome if we could do X, Y, Z? And it's like, well, yeah, technically it's feasible, but it'll either come off as spammy or, you know, it pollutes the system. And I think that, you know, we're kind of in this trial and error phase of, you know, finding out the right things that work. But yeah, I don't want to go down that kind of chinky route of just the coupon-y thing.
And you don't want to be the Google toilet, if you've seen that video. I mean, where it, you know, an ad shows up saying, if you like Indian food, while the guy's using the toilet, and he's like, how did you know oh. Exactly. You don't want it to feel like you're intruding on – it's weird. Well, privacy is a whole area with this kind of product, right? I mean, I've seen people say, I'll use Gowalla or I'll use Foursquare when it has more respect for my privacy. And I'm like, this is an app that lets you tell the whole internet that you're having lunch at Tchotchke's. So how can you ask for privacy when the whole purpose of the app is to announce? At the same time, you don't want it to seem like the app is a step ahead of you and – you know, wow, this is only the second time you've been to the gym all month. Maybe you should get these diet foods. Like, you don't want to go that way. You don't want to seem like you're paying too much attention to users. So how much do you collect knowledge on? Do you collect it data about where your users are going, or how do you? Go ahead.
I said the stuff that we do look into that's interesting is say taking the, you know, anonymized data of a given city, and then kind of looking at the categories of places that people go. We're not actually doing anything with this now. But it is interesting to look at. So for instance, a lot of this plays out stereotypically how you would expect. We find that, you know, say 40% of people in Austin have checked in at a Mexican restaurant this week. So no surprise there. In Seattle, people drink lots of coffee. In Boulder, Colorado, there's a lot of microbrewery check-ins. So there's definitely, you know, some things like that are certainly interesting, and I think start to become, you know, a window into the habits of a society in a given place. For instance, you know, here in America, we have, you know, lots of check-ins at airports, but in Europe, it's train stations, and I think it's kind of cool to note that sort of thing where it goes on.
Are some cities more religious than others, and have you heard from politicians who maybe want to address a particular church group? Or, I mean, there's that potential as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I
think
that's
a certain group
we haven't
votes a certain
all
way.
Those things yet.
Yeah. Which is like exciting and scary, I would think.
I think it's definitely one of those things that you want to, you know, continue to be asking yourself, how do we, again, provide value for and respect the people who are using the service? And that's where I think even now, the new features that we're going to be releasing over the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks primarily have to do with giving the folks who are going out with Gowalla better social tools to communicate with each other. So it's less about, you know, either business product or brand related stuff, more about how do we make it, you know, more fun for people to connect with each other. And I think that always has to be the first priority.
Now let's talk about technology a little bit. You're using, you have some really nice CSS3 stuff happening on your website, on your public web website. Do you create the Gowalla apps in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript and then port them to the different platforms, or are you writing in C for the iPhone and using a different language? I mean,
So everything's native for the device that it's on. And I think early on we made a decision that we wanted to, you know, provide the best experience possible for each platform. We felt like we wanted Gowalla to be a showcase app for each phone that it was on, regardless of what that phone was. And so we have spent the time to, you know, obviously the iPhone's kind of our flagship, you know, application, but we've written an Android, you know, app from scratch, from the ground up. And we've done the same for Palm's WebOS. And honestly, we're excited about the HP acquisition because hopefully it's an elegant operating system. I hope it continues to live. And then BlackBerry is an interesting one as well. So, you know, they have a similar situation to Apple in that they control both the hardware and the software, but there's a lot more, you know, device and carrier fragmentation. And so that's why, you know, that one for us has been a little bit of a slower development process because you have to do a lot more testing. It's tough. And so from a team, you know, breakdown standpoint, we have, you know, a core team that's working on, you know, the API and kind of the brain that sits at the middle of Gowalla. And we've got guys like, you know, Keegan and Tim Van Dam and now our new designer Drew Yeaton who are working on both, you know, the pretty web stuff that you see, but then also the design for, you know, the iPhone and Android clients. Sure. But then, you know, we actually code we code iPhone completely 100% in house, and we're looking to move Android in house as soon as possible. We've been blessed to work with some really great, you know, folks outside of the office who have partnered with us to build, you know, the experiences on these other platforms. But we've wanted it to be native, you know, and
so Josh, how, as from the development standpoint, this is really interesting to me, because one of the questions that I really have is, how do you try to create an identical or a relatively similar experience on each of the platforms? Because they are pretty close. And a lot of the time you'll see an Android app that's, you know, that's mediocre, an iPhone app that's great, and then the Palm Pre app is like one screen. You know, I mean, how do you do that? And how do those decisions come to affect one another? In other words, when you think of, okay, we've got a new feature coming out, does it go first to the iPhone and then to the Android and then to everything else?
Yeah, I think that you actually kind of nailed it there. We definitely have a tiering of our feature sets of what we consider like the, you know, A-level features and B-level features. And, you know, the iPhone is likely where, you know, you'll see us move, you know, release new stuff to first. Now, Android's definitely picking up steam. It's certainly, we're seeing a lot of growth and adoption of Gowalla on that platform. It's still not to the degree of iPhone, but enough so that we would like it to, you know, have parity as quickly as possible. And again, BlackBerry is kind of its own, you know, its own beast. So we definitely have kind of a trickle down of, hey, when we release on a new platform, it needs to have, you know, A, B, and C. And then we'll be content to have, you know, the next three features come a few months later.
You're doing this by feel, right?
A little bit by feel, and some of it by the limitations of the platform as well. So, you know, again, certain platforms are going to allow, I guess, easier access to certain, you know, certain APIs, and whether it's, you know, getting to a camera or you know, better or worse location services. And so that's definitely dictating how we're tackling things. And in a lot of ways, we're going after low hanging fruit first. So one thing that's interesting is, like, for instance, Android, has a really, interesting way of doing notifications that's different than the iPhone. I think we'd probably all agree that actually the notification system on iPhone, the push notifications is kind of not the best. But on Android, it allows you to do some stuff that is actually really interesting. And so we made a decision early on that we were actually going to spend some time making sure that we supported, you know, Android notifications in a, you know, more robust way than we have on the iPhone, simply because it allows for it. And so that's where we're definitely looking for the nuances on these platforms to hopefully allow us to try some new stuff out. And you know, the upside to that is these platform, you know, providers are looking for people to be pushing the boundaries of their technology, and it has a way of, you know, raising the awareness of your application when you are taking advantage of things that are very, you know, personalized to a given platform or over another.
Over in the chat room here, they're asking questions like, they'd like to know about implementations that might work with background location services. So, you know, you mentioned something about coupons before, and that maybe, you know, not really being the direction that you want to go in, but what if there was a way that, you know, on somebody's phone, when they go into a place, if somebody that they know is there, maybe it tells them that. I mean, are those the kinds of things that, I know you don't want to give away too many of your secrets there, but
that's definitely the sort of stuff that we're looking at as it relates to especially background stuff. So there's definitely, like we've seen a certain category of applications, even like Google Latitude, that track location in the background. And actually, you know, the experience is very much like looking at a flashing red dot on a map. And for us, that's not what we want to build. And I personally don't think it's as interesting as wrapping context around it to say I'm at, you know, Mellow Johnny's bike shop, as opposed to I'm at this particular lat long, you know, moving down the highway. And so that's the sort of background location that we're less interested in that. But to your point, I think if we can, you know, provide interesting ways to, say yes, you've got a friend that's nearby, or even to prompt you to say, hey, you know, it looks like this is a place that you've been to before. You know, would you like to check in? And just remind somebody to do that. I think we're always going to take the we see checking in as very much an opt-in thing, not something we want to do for a variety of reasons on somebody's behalf. And so I think there's always going to want to that check there that the user's, you know, initiating that. But there are ways that we can use background to prompt, you know, some behaviors, which I think are really fascinating.
Now, Jeffrey, you're like an insanely crazy user of Gowalla. I mean, what kind of features would you want? What do you think is there in the future for you as somebody? I mean, you're in a very metropolitan area, right? Well, you're always traveling around New York by foot most of the time, checking in every 30 or 40 feet, it would seem.
No, that's not true, but I use it a lot. I mean, with what Josh was just talking about, what if there was some opt-in way to, during a particular journey, check in automatically so that if I'm at this mall in Boston, this amazing mall that has like 50 stores, every time I walk into a store, it could, you know, I wouldn't send this to Twitter, but it could go ahead and note that I'd been at that place, right? Which would just be so I could remember afterwards whether I wanted to recreate the journey or what was the name of that store in between the two places I went to. There's like that potential interest. I think in my fantasy world, you know, Google Maps and not Sidewalk. I'm blanking on the name. You know, the user-created reviews of restaurants, Yelp. I can imagine Yelp, Gowalla, Google Maps all coming. This is not an automatic thing, but like allowing you to connect those kinds of things together. Or again, if I wanted to make a blog about my favorite restaurants in my town or my favorite whatevers, I should be able, you know, if I could, you know, besides just adding manually typing a link to a Gowalla page, what else could I do? Could Gowalla pull in that? And you don't want to burden the portable app, but maybe on the website itself, there could be richer content and you could opt into that on your phone, depending on, you know, whether you have 3G, 4G, 5G, or, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, one of the other ones that I don't know what the broad mass market appeal of this is, but it's certainly something we've talked about here. One of the problems that, you know, we all run into, obviously, is that of network connection. So what do you do when, you know, your cell network goes down on you? And then, you know, beyond that, what do you do about places where just no cell network exists? And so, you know, for instance, if we're about getting people to go out to, you know, extraordinary places, you know, my wife and I, we kind of have on our to-do list to go hike the Nepali coast in Kauai, in Hawaii, which is one of the more remote places in the world. But obviously AT&T, that's part of the, 3% of America they don't cover. And so, supposedly. And so if we go out there, like I'd love to be able to check in and basically take some photos and I log that on Gowalla, but I'm not going to be able to do it because of the lack of network. But GPS still works. And so is there a way that we can still track that, make a path, you know, save it locally on your phone and then put it back up there? You know, when you get back to the network, allow you to like curate it, you know, on the web at that point, to your point of kind of like, you know, fill the blanks back in.
Another difficulty, when you're dealing with something really big like the Brooklyn Bridge or the East River, someone may put a mark, you know, someone may put, say, I'm on the Brooklyn Bridge as they're driving across it in the right-hand lane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe if you're it becomes difficult, right? Or I know there's at least three places where the East River is marked, which means like someone in Harlem did it. Someone on the Lower East Side did it. Someone in Midtown did it. And if you're not at any of those spots, if you're not close to any of those spots, I mean, you want to be able to, what about like a long thing like that or a highway? I recently took a road trip and I just kept going, wow, I wish there was some way to indicate.
How do I check in on Route 66?
Yeah. Right. Or I'm standing at 42nd Street and Broadway. Not I'm going to, you know, some tacky Times Square, you know, tourist trap, but I'm just at this intersection. I'm in this intersection in Rome, not that I'm at somebody's restaurant, but I'm at this amazing, famous, world famous intersection. I wish there was a way to do that, and I don't know how you do it. On the path that you were talking about, the trip with your wife, even if you had AT&T on that remote island, how do you indicate that you're hiking this mountain? I mean, you can't just go like, I'm going to mark this rock now. Awesome rock that we climbed, right?
Exactly.
But if you want to share some rock that you climbed where you had an amazing view, how do you do that? There's sort of a, there's a godlike experience or an Adam-like experience, maybe like ADAM, right, where Adam got to name everything, where you could, in theory, create a place that doesn't exist, and that's really fun. Mm. But you don't want people creating millions of nonsensical, unreal places. So I don't know.
It's an interesting balance to to find. Early on, you know, anecdotally, kind of along the same lines. All of Gowalla, like 100% of our 99.999% of our spots are actually created by our users. So we didn't go out and like license or buy place data from, you know, the Yellow Pages. And so any location that's in the database is a place that someone has actually been. And I think that's one of the, you know, we'll actually break 1.5 million places sometime within the next, you know, week or so, which is really exciting to see that we've had people go out to, you know, 170 plus different countries and go to all these different, you know, different places and add these spots. But early on, you know, when you think about, so we launched, Gowalla here in Austin. And of course, Austin has these great, you know, lots of great music venues, lots of great eateries and restaurants and parks and kind of what you might say are culturally, you know, relevant type locations. But then back up where I'm from originally in Dallas, you know, people are going out and adding, you know, Victoria's Secret and Jared the Gallery yes. of Jewelry. And at first it was like, wait a second, we didn't want to build an app just so people could go and check in at Vicky's. But the more we poured over that, when we realized, you know, that's not something like, who are we to tell somebody else what's important for their life? And for a lot of people, that is what's important. That is what's exciting. And so, you know, there's a little bit of an agnostic approach where we just kind of want to sit back and, you know, let people add the places that are important to them. Now, to your point, I think we still draw the line and we want them to be places and not like I'm checking into, you know, a state of mind or some, you know, there's still right. like some stuff that, you know, I think we still look for there. But certainly, you know, those are the challenges of how do we provide as much of a canvas as possible for our community to drive that train, but still get us where, you know, the core is, again, about connecting people with places.
Although recently I checked into a famous bathroom in the Minneapolis airport. In fact, if I can sign in real quick.
Was that actually added as a spot?
It was already a spot when I got there. Yes,
it's the guy remarkable. Who excellent.
The guy who had the encounter and then denied that he'd had the encounter.
Did you leave a tip? I mean, a tap or?
It was the guy. I have to go back a little bit further. Sorry, I do use Gowalla a lot. I can see that I've already been like 50 other places. Larry Craig Memorial Bathroom is the place. Now, he's technically not dead, so I'm not sure why it was memorial. Maybe, but someone pointed out maybe, well, his career died, so that might be it.
Well, I've got a question for you, kind of jumping back in time a little bit, Josh. You know, a lot of people like me have known you in this space for, you know, for some time. I mean, again, Jeffrey mentioned this in the beginning of the show, but I kind of wanted to circle back to it a little bit briefly. You know, you started life doing, you started the internet development life doing, you know, doing web designs for other mm-hmm. people. You were a custom design shop. People could go to you and say, we want a website, and you'd build them a website. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of launched into building some web applications, some of which I'm sure you could tell us stories about. And what was that experience like in general? Was there a reason why you left it? Because a lot of our listeners, including, you know, maybe some of our co-hosts here, do that for a living. you know, why leave that space? Why not stay doing that? You guys were well known and successful in right. that area. Why go away from it?
That's a really good question. I feel like maybe from a personality standpoint, some of it's just, you know, human nature to me. I had a grandfather who was an orthodontist, and somewhere along the line, he just decided, oh, I don't want to work on teeth anymore, and I'm going to go, work at a ski area. And then it became, I'm going to, you know, get into real estate, and I'm going to build homes. And he just kind of never felt like obligated to stick in one place simply because that's where he had been. And, I think that, you know, as Firewheel got up and running, and we were just working with great clients and great people and had a really, you know, solid team assembled. And it all just seemed like this really natural progression of, doors that opened and opportunities that were made available to us that every step along the way was just somewhat of a natural evolution of the one before. And I can't ever look at a time where we really like drove a stake in the ground and said, okay, we're stopping with A and we're starting with B now. It's all been really fluid. And I think in some ways it's just been part of me and the team of guys that I've been working with. There are six of us who've been together now for, five plus years at this point. And we've just continued to kind of, I think, follow our heart on this one. And certainly that's so one of the adventures along the way was we built this invoicing service called BlinkSale. And actually BlinkSale did really well, and actually it raised the awareness of us as a consulting shop. But
if I remember right, it was one of the first big Rails apps too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Beyond after Basecamp and what the guys at the 37 Signals were doing, right. It was definitely early on. And my co-founder Scott and I, we grew that for. And speaking of which, it that one was hard. You know, the first probably 10 months of BlinkSale was one of those things where you sat there and thought, man, we've invested a significant chunk of our resources into this. Is it going to be worth it? And it wasn't really until about 10 months in that I would say it became profitable. It actually started paying for itself, and I think that just speaks to, for those who have ideas out there, the whole if you build it, they will come mentality isn't necessarily true. It's kind of like you have to build it and then you have to keep building on it. And it takes
and marketing.
Time. Yeah. Exactly. There's a lot of persistence that comes with it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say with BlinkSale ultimately is in as much as, there were thousands of businesses that were using the service and I would classify as success when the opportunity to do Gowalla came around, and it was kind of like this weight of, wow, do we build a service that allows people to go out and explore the world or solve their small business finance needs? Both are problems to be solved, I guess. But from a personal standpoint, right. One was more exciting to us than the other. And gratefully, we were able to find, someone to come in and continue development on BlinkSale now. And they're kind of taking off and doing that on their own. But it's definitely a progression.
Handing off something that you built is very tricky and tough and scary.
Mm-hmm.
This community of people that really love and rely on a thing. And you don't, how did you find... When it's time to do that, I've never done that, but I'm sure I will do that at some point. When it's time to hand off something, one of your babies, how do you find the right partner for that? How do you find the right people, company? What do you look for?
In the case of BlinkSale, it worked out really well in the sense that, gratefully, it was profitable and it was making money, and so we certainly didn't have a reason to sell it. We didn't need to fire sell the thing or do anything like that. On the flip side, we knew that our attention was increasingly going to be devoted elsewhere, and for the benefit of the people using the service, it would be ideal if somebody else were able to come in and work on it. So we weren't actively seeking somebody out to, you know, acquire it. Gratefully, a fellow entrepreneur friend of mine, who also in his own right has had a fairly successful, you know, career, came in and he had a team in place and said, "Hey, I really see some value in this, and I've got these guys here. Would you let us, you know, come in and we can continue building on this?" And it was a really fortuitous situation where we were able to, you know, hand it to people that we trusted, who were gonna, you know, that we felt like had our best, you know, our best interest in mind, and our users' best interest in mind. And we're real happy about how that worked out. I mean, honestly, there's some of this stuff that I wish I could give you like some formulaic answer of like, oh, if you just do A, B, and C, it'll all work out. And there's some of this I feel like we've been blessed and lucky that certain things have just kind of fallen together.
And it's people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So say it's 3 years from now and you're like, man, what was I thinking with Gowalla? I'm tired of this. I mean, you're 30 and you've had, you know, five or six very successful career phases already. Like, and I think part of that is that you're somewhat mercurial and, you know, creative. And I know for me, I mean, one of the appeals of client services is that you're always working on a different thing. Mm-hmm. If you were to lose interest in personally continuing to run Gowalla, how would you hand that off? Have you thought about that at all? And, you know, because you have users who will hunt you down if,
Man, so this was, to be honest, this is the first, I think the first thing that we've really delved into as a team where we feel like we have the opportunity to build something that reaches millions of people's lives. And, there's an aspect of that is really, truly exciting, not just to me, but to the guys that I'm working with. And also, there's an aspect of it that feels very real and true to myself. So again, I mentioned earlier that I grew up with a family that kind of enjoyed road tripping, and you know, we'd drive across Idaho and, you know, the western half of the US, and I have a lot of these, you know, fond memories of, you know, the places that I went growing up. And even now, you know, it as much as we're busting our butts here, we do get the opportunity to go out and travel a little bit and go see, you know, our users in various places. And that's really fulfilling. And I can't tell you how fulfilled I feel, you know, as a person, as an entrepreneur, with what we're doing right now. So it's difficult for me to imagine, you know, a world, you know, 3 years from now where this has gotten old. My hope is that, you know, we can continue to see Gowalla, you know, grow, not just as, you know, an iPhone app or a web service, but truly is kind of a movement that inspires people to explore the world. I know that sounds kind of highfalutin and everything, but that's the thing that really excites me on a personal level, and hopefully we can just continue to do it.
It doesn't sound highfalutin to me. It sounds sincere and pretty wonderful, and I know that's the kind of person you are, so that's very cool, and I think we're coming to a nice stopping place. Dan, are there... I wanted to bring up one other thing, which is Wikihood. Have you seen that, Josh, and have you thought about tying in with something like that?
Yeah, I think that sort of thing is really interesting. Anything that involves communities kind of curating information about, you know, locales, I think is really fascinating, and certainly I think one of our core tenets. And so where there's opportunity to, you know, work with, you know, organizations like that, I think we're certainly interested.
So like I'm just started using Wikihood on my iPad, and I get to Minneapolis and I open my iPad and it tells me, basically it finds any culturally relevant thing that I can walk to in the immediate area. So if there's a museum or there's a park or there's a statue of, I mean, I can find that on Gowalla too. I could find that there was a statue of Mary Tyler Moore within walking distance, and I went to it, and that's cool. But with Wikihood, I could actually find out like who built that and why they put it there and all that. And again, to be able to tie those kind of services together so that there was a more info link on anything that had a Wikihood, anything that basically had a Wiki Wikipedia entry to it that was location-based.
Well, and the iPad, you mentioned that back to even like device-centric, applications. So the iPad is just open, especially for apps like ours and Wikia, it's like having a living atlas almost. And, I love that. I think it's really exciting. So now it's not just I can see, here's Yankee Stadium, but I can actually pull that thing up and see the photos that people are taking of the game right now. That's really cool.
You know, one of the things I love Gowalla on the iPad. I think it's absolutely one of the most beautiful things. Sometimes I'll take screenshots of just, and put them up on my Flickr stream because I think they're so beautiful. Like this combination of these maps with the places that mean things to people superimposed and with these, like, the wonderful way that the cartoony graphics of Gowalla mix with the graphic style of the maps. It's just amazing. But, I love just dragging my hand like on a city that I'm in, and as I come to a new location, as a new area, different things pop up, pinching and zooming and having, so when I first, if you first get to New York, you'll see the site of the 9/11 tragedy and, Times Square and those kinds of expected things. But if you pinch, zoom in on an area, you're going to start to see like Moishe's little bagel shop or whatever. And I think that's amazing. You can, by dragging and pinching, get a very granular experience of the place you're in and then go explore it. I think that's great,
Yeah.
And I think the carryability, is that a word? The mobility of once you get over feeling like the iPad is this fragile thing you can't take anywhere, once you just start carrying it around, I mean, it is great. It's like got this living encyclopedia, Mr. Spock device with you. It's pretty awesome.
You need cargo shorts with really big pockets.
Got them.
Thanks for joining us today, Josh.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks again to our guest today, Josh Williams of Gowalla. Thanks also to MailChimp for making this show possible. Visit them at MailChimp.com/5x5 for those special deals I told you about. And of course, thanks to you for listening. You can listen to previous episodes of this show and check out all of the other shows we produce by visiting 5x5.tv. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating the show on iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find out about the show. This is Dan Benjamin for The Big Web Show. We'll see you again next week.